Hello and welcome to the Nature Positive Network podcast. This episode is brought to you by Xylo Systems, a data and AI cloud platform helping businesses to measure and manage their biodiversity footprint. Welcome to the Nature Positive Network podcast. Today, we're thrilled to have Heath Evans, the CMO of Wilderlands, join us. Wilderlands is an innovative nature tech solution that provides individuals and organizations with the ability to protect Australia's biodiversity through the purchase of biological diversity units, or BDUs. Wilderlands is a response to the need for greater investment in nature, and they're on a mission to empower you to make a direct and lasting impact on Australia's biodiversity. Heath Evans is a marketing and communication strategist, entrepreneur, coach, and self-professed master of dad jokes. His work spans sports, not-for-profits, startups, and education. Join us as we learn more about how technology and innovation are driving progress in conservation efforts from Heath himself. Heath Evans, welcome to the Nature Positive Network podcast. Wilderlands is arguably one of the most exciting nature tech startups out of Australia right now. I've been a big fan of you since you launched last year, so I'm excited for our listeners to hear more about the great work that you're doing. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thrilled to be here.
Now, you've had quite the career in sports and not-for-profit marketing. How exactly did you get into conservation? What got you interested in it? And what led to your current role as CMO of Wilderlands?
It's a really great question. And often I feel quite the imposter stepping into an area which, frankly, I don't have any background in. But I heard Seth Godin speak when he launched his Carbon Almanac. And he said something that really struck me. And at the time, I was working at an innovation precinct run by the University of Melbourne. But he said something along the lines, and I'll paraphrase, but he basically said, protecting the planet is now the role of every single person and the project you'll have to go on to for the rest of your life. He said, it doesn't matter where you are, what you're doing, because of what we've done to the world, this is now the responsibility of all of us, and we need to embrace that and accept that. And it really struck me that actually there was no permission required, and the permission was there that we actually needed to step up and do it. And if you're a capable person, you needed to turn your mind to it no matter where you were on that journey. That's something I think about a lot, because what it means is across the world, people are going to have to step in and step up to take action here and know that they're not equipped and not knowledgeable and don't have the background to do so, but actually we need the best and brightest minds working to help solve this challenge. And so I guess that's what drew me to this opportunity. The next question was, well, how could I actually step into this? And Ash Knopp, who is one of the co-founders of Wilderlands, I worked with many years ago at World Vision. And throughout my career, I've tried to find a way to do work that matters. And for me, that means work with purpose. And at World Vision, we worked on a project with another girl, Samantha Gash, where she ran from one side of India to the other, exploring how we could use running as a vehicle to essentially address the barriers to education for children. And the whole premise was around how can you change the world through footsteps, step by step. And in many ways with Wilderlands, the proposition is how can you change the world square meter by square meter. And so there's some parallels there, but that's how someone with a background far beyond conservation ended up working for a startup that's trying to tackle the biodiversity loss crisis.
And now you're a new dad. You already felt a sense of responsibility to step into this space and contribute positively to, you know, some of the biggest challenges that we're seeing globally, like biodiversity loss. Do you now feel an even more urgent sense of responsibility to address this issue?
I definitely feel a sense of legacy, you know, and I think one of the things that's really inspired me is as I speak to other dads who've come before me, I am a new dad. I've been trying for many years, but the friends of mine who've had children often speak about this realization that there is a life beyond theirs and there's a responsibility to create the environment that will enable children to flourish. So I definitely feel that responsibility. I also feel the responsibility to accept that this is an enormous challenge, but we each need to do our tiny part. And collectively, you know, from parents through to young children, there's something you can do. And I think Woodlands really opens that door for people to step in and realize that, they can make a difference, even if it is a small one.
And Wilderlands enables individuals and organisations to really make that difference through the purchase of biological diversity units, or BDUs as they're shortened to. Can you explain in layman's terms what biological diversity units are and how they work to protect our biodiversity?
I certainly can, and it's taken me a while to get my head around, so I'll do my best to simplify an incredibly complex system. Essentially, what we do is leverage existing conservation covenant practices. So in states across Australia, there's existing conservation covenants. And so what will happen is a landholder will have a piece of land that they want to explore protecting. They'll apply to government bodies for a conservation covenant. At that point, the ecologists will go out and assess whether this land is worthy and of high ecological value and worth protecting, and a conservation plan will be outlined. Once that's outlined and there's an agreement between the landholder and the government body or statutory body, a legally binding conservation covenant can be placed over the top of that land, which will ensure that it's protected in perpetuity, and it becomes the responsibility of that landholder to carry out that work. And so what we've recognised is there are these mechanisms that can ensure the permanent protection of land. And what we've done is come over the top of that, add an additional layer of conservation practice, which is designed by our ecologist team, but then unitize the impact of that work down to 1 square meter units, which actually mean that there's a twofold mechanism happening here. For landholders, there's an incentive to protect the planet and actually be incentivized and rewarded for doing so. And for individuals wanting to support work like this, there's a way they can do this at a really granular level. And the 1 square meter unit, which is geotagged, enables people to not only contribute to that protection, but see exactly where it is they're protecting, understand the work that's taking place. And because conservation covenants already have elaborate plans and a quite complex system you need to go through to achieve those or obtain those, it gives confidence that the work that's being carried out on this land is not just around protection, but actually proactively enabling those you know, various ecosystems to flourish. So the only other things I'll add is, so with the BDU, we've obviously created these units. We're one of the world's first voluntary biodiversity units. We've created a registry that ensures the integrity of those units and that they can only be purchased once and then retired. And the goal is that over time we can bring on more landholders and help create a movement that actually sees farmers consider protecting the planet a viable path forward.
I personally have purchased about 50 square metres on Wilderlands. I think that piece that it's protected for perpetuity is really important, and as a consumer is something that really drew me to Wilderlands. I know that you have a fantastic white paper on your website, and we'll provide all the links to your website and to that white paper in the description. So if any listeners want to go and dig into exactly what those BDUs are, they can, and that's there. But there might be some landholders listening out here as well. How can they get involved with the Wilderlands?
It's really interesting. We've created a marketplace. On one side we've got the demand of consumers wanting to support. On the other side, we've got landholders who are seeking the opportunity to actually come into our system. And to be honest, we're inundated with requests. And the fact that our other co-founder, Paul Detman, is a sixth-generation farmer, I think it's his real lived experience knowing how hard it is to create this incentive structure that's meant that our proposition fits so well with landholders. The simplest way is for them to get in touch with our team. We work with landholders who essentially meet the criteria of that methodology. But we're, you know, whilst at the moment we work with Cassinia, our aspiration is over time to bring on a whole range of other providers, whether they are small-scale farmers and landholders right through to large conservation organisations.
It's fantastic. And I know that some of those conservation projects that you're working with are really, really exciting. Can you talk about some of those specific projects that has had an impact on biodiversity?
I certainly can. And I think what's drawn people to Woodlands as well is some of the partnerships with traditional owners as well. So probably the one that gets quite a lot of recognition. And, you know, when I first started here, I heard about the project in the Coorong Lakes, which is done in collaboration with the traditional owners, the Ngarrindjeri people of that region. And that's, you know, protecting one of the most important wetland ecosystems in Australia. And so I think the critical piece around protection is actually how do we preserve what's there? You know, there's a lot around, and there are bits where we're, you know, revegetating or buffering certain areas, a remnant. But because we work with private landholders, what it recognises is some of the most valuable ecosystem and the most at-risk biodiversity is in privately held land. And that answers that question of why we'd work with private landholders. So that's probably one of the more celebrated projects we have and has been recognised. King Charles has his initiative that actually came out and did an 8-minute documentary on that project celebrating not only the conservation work that's happening, but actually the work with traditional owners, recognising that there's so much knowledge that's been passed down through generations through traditional owners that importantly can be learned upon. And the goal of that project is actually to hand that project back to traditional owners over time. And so in that collaboration, what's taking place is a lot of the local community not only work in the project, but also the broader community is supported through whether it's purchased through nurseries and also upskilling, which means it's actually a true partnership in that case. And I think that's really important to take that knowledge and that knowledge transfer. And I think our aspiration is to work with landholders, particularly who are working hand in glove with traditional owners in different areas.
So important. Being a proud Kamilaroi woman, I am also strongly of the belief that we truly can't overcome the challenge of preserving our biodiversity unless we have that biological and cultural approach. And traditional owners have effectively managed our landscapes for well over 50,000 years, and they're going to be key to overcoming this challenge. So I think there's really two ways in which we can scale up our conservation impact. It's working with traditional owners, but also working with technology. I'm wondering, how does technology play a role in promoting conservation efforts? And what are some of the developments that you've seen in this field that excite you about, turbocharging our ability to preserve biodiversity for future generations?
Mm. Well, look, selfishly, I'll promote how we use technology. Obviously, geotagging's been a key part of our proposition. What, you know, I'd seen in previous roles at World Vision working with the likes of Thank You Water is people want to know where is their money going, and there's this beautiful sense of being able to see where it is you're supporting. So we geotag each of our units, and then we're working on technology that will enable you to zoom in and see exactly where it is you're protecting, but then importantly also receive regular updates from expert ecologists on the ground. And I think that's there's no better way to teach people than for them to experience and see what it is conservation or ecology work looks like. And so that's, I guess, one of the ways we're using technology. The other that really excites me, we worked with a mixed reality organisation called Foria to create an augmented reality experience recently at an event we did with Lendlease. And so what happened there was Lendlease protected the equivalent square metres of the event space they were holding their sustainability summit at. We then created a way that attendees at the event could unlock their own 10 square metres of protection. So rather than walking home with a tote bag, they were able to actually not only talk about doing good, but actually do good in that moment. And then we created this Birds of Wilderlands piece where we took the most high energy music video and we stripped out all the wrappers and put in bird species. And then we created an augmented reality experience where people could walk around the event space and see birds flying around their head and actually learn about the type of species they're protecting. And You know, these are all technologies we see in other industries and take for granted. But I think what they're able to do in nature is actually, the term biodiversity feels so loaded and so complex. But when we just talk about nature, I think innately we understand what that is. And so we're exploring how we can bring nature into urban spaces so people can have an accessible conversation around, when we talk about biodiversity loss, what do we actually mean? So there's some things. Obviously, for us, the big goal is, how do we document our work? So we have, we use existing technology such as, we have camera points set up that are always exciting to see what type of animals are coming across the camera at night. Even in that Coorong Lakes region, we had a dingo recently, which is actually the totem for the traditional owners of that region. So that was really special. And so there's some of the things. And then, look, I'd be stepping outside my lane to talk about, from a conservation side of things, what our team are using. But I know they're constantly exploring new innovations, whether it be working with the likes of, you know, our aspiration is to work with someone like Xylo and get to the level of reporting and understanding what we're doing. I'm just trying to think of all the other things we do. I'll leave it at just a couple of those points that I think from a marketing side are all about how do you bring people closer to the work and how do you create greater transparency. We're also involved at the moment with a pilot with a major bank, exploring how we can use blockchain to create greater transparency around our units, not only their ownership, but also being able to trace the work that's happened. And so I think what that will enable us to do will be to think about, how do we reward people for taking action? How does purchasing a unit actually open up other opportunities, whether it's using this as a ticket to get into events, whether it's using it for benefits more broadly? I think as Australia explores a voluntary biodiversity market, you know, the evolution progression towards exploring blockchain as a viable technology and the benefits that brings for transparency is certainly things that we're fortunate to be on the front line of, because we're relatively early as a provider.
There are some really, really exciting examples of that intersection between conservation technology and innovation. And I think that's what makes Wilderlands one of the most exciting nature tech startups out of Australia right now. You're really at that forefront of creating change for conservation using technology and innovation. And I think hopefully in the future there'll be a Wilderlands and Xylo Systems collaboration. So watch this space. You talked a little bit there about how you worked with Lendlease to get them involved in protecting biodiversity. More generally, how can businesses specifically get involved in protecting biodiversity? Because it is an emerging issue for a lot of businesses around the world. They understand their impacts. But more importantly, I think they're interested in understanding what are the benefits of doing so and getting involved in biodiversity protection from a business side.
Mm. It's a really interesting question, because it taps into this underlying misconception that this is around the simple point is biodiversity loss is bad for business. And I think some people see spending money to protect biodiversity as some sort of discretionary spend, you know, it's some sort of charity spend. But actually what we're seeing is businesses recognize it's a critical spend, because so much of nature has a direct impact on business. And I think as we see businesses start to more transparently reveal their impact on nature, it's going to become, actually in the same way we've seen people move towards net zero, I think nature positive is going to be a natural evolution and a critical evolution, because stakeholders expect it, customers expect it, and businesses will reap the benefits because they realize that so many ingredients rely on nature. Our soil, you know, healthy soil has a critical role on nature, healthy water and the like. So I think that's the simple message. Biodiversity loss is bad for business, and we're waking up and realizing it. What I will say, though, is when we go into a business, I very, very rarely go in and pitch a biodiversity solution. And so the first thing we say is we're here to solve business problems. Because the moment we mention biodiversity, we end up pushed to the sustainability team in an organization. And usually that solves one business problem, which are usually large-scale ESG decisions. The interesting thing about the Lendlease example was that was marketing money that we tapped into. And so what we try to do is go into businesses to understand what business problem are you trying to solve? You know, for events at the moment, we're partnering with the Adelaide Festival, and, you know, they've got a really interesting challenge to solve, which is how do they put on an event for the people, which also considers protecting the planet. And we're helping them take action and thinking about creative ways that people who attend the event can unlock their own one square meter of protection and get a shared sense of purpose with the organization whilst protecting their local area. So more and more for us, we try to tap into sides of the business that actually enable quick decisions and actually enable businesses to dabble in what it looks like to protect nature without needing a 6-month decision roadmap and getting caught up in red tape, because there is a real fear around businesses stepping into an area they don't understand and being labeled as greenwashing or other areas. So I do understand that apprehension, but I think what we do by having our one square meter and other things that make this a really tangible way to take action is make it accessible without making it too terrifying for businesses to do what they know is right, but in an area that is, you know, fraught with risk when you're dealing with providers, particularly in a new market.
I think that is such an interesting approach to business in solving business problems and not solving biodiversity problems. I know that we at Zatler Systems can learn from that a lot, but probably a lot of other nature tech solutions out there can probably learn from having that multi-prong approach to business and biodiversity. We do see a lot of solutions being pushed to the ESG and sustainability teams, and often we see a lot of sustainability managers and teams are becoming quite overwhelmed with the complexity of incorporating biodiversity into business operations and really presenting that business case for the entire entity. I mean, outside of marketing, which you've already given us some excellent examples of, what are some other challenges and obstacles that you see businesses facing when trying to include biodiversity considerations in their operations, and how can those be overcome?
It's interesting, and I'll just speak from a startup perspective. You know, we launched Wilderlands as very much a B2C experience. We built a front-end platform that has the ability to log in, track your impact, and a really strong consumer experience. But we've very much pivoted heavily to B2B and B2B2B. And when I talk B2B2B, what we do is we work through a lot of carbon brokers who have established relationships into big businesses to now bring Wilderlands units into their product offering. And so they're working with large organizations who have committed money for ESG, who are exploring what it means to bring this into their into their suite of commitments. And so in those cases, sometimes we're at arm's length from the final purchaser, but what we try to do is equip our, let's say, resellers or our distributors with what they need to have that confident conversation. I think in our case, what we see is sustainability teams have been fighting for change for decades, you know, and they're reflective of the broader conservation industry, which has been desperately trying to tell the world that change is required and beating their head against the wall. And I think whether it's sustainability teams or, you know, the broader conservation sector, there's probably a real fatigue that actually is frustrated, pleased that we're seeing change, but probably frustrated that they've been pushing for this change for a long time. So what we try to do is work with businesses with a hopeful message, with a sense that you can take action, with information that provides a depth of information that you can either at a top line communicate very simply and see the content we produce, and we also produce bespoke content to help communicate this message simply. But then we also have the white paper and other mechanisms. And I think the fact we leverage conservation covenants and other things that have been around for 50 years gives greater confidence in what we do and greater transparency. But there's no doubt that there's a real challenge for sustainability teams and marketing teams to work together. And I think where we're helping bridge that gap is helping businesses do good, be seen to be doing good, and bring their customers on the journey. And I think that's a challenge that we, you know, all businesses have faced for a long time. And we're trying our best to bridge that by creating a way that actually not only can you make big purchases, but you can actually make small actions. And you know, often one thing we see is our customer and our consumer are two different people. A customer might be the business who is buying the units, but they're actually buying them on behalf of their consumers to actually experience what protection looks like, and they'll claim those for free. So that's an interesting dynamic that we see more and more, which is individuals care about protecting the planet but may not have the money to do so. Businesses want to protect the planet and know their customers care but don't have an easy way to bring them on the journey. So I've rambled there and I've gone in many tangents, but I think we are under no illusion that you can lose this race in a minute if you don't lead with trust and rigor and acknowledge, you know, how tenuous this relationship with businesses is. And if, with all the fear that comes around the carbon market, the biodiversity market has natural trepidation, but we have always led with believing that we need robustness in everything we do, and that's the most important thing. And when the market matures, we'll be here, but we can't rush to try to compromise on any of that quality or rigor, you know, for the goal of quick growth.
The exciting thing is that we're really at the beginning of this biodiversity market wave, and we're going to see it grow and grow in the next few years. And I think so much faster than we've seen that carbon market grown. It's kind of been first to market and broken the ground for us so we can come in and make it a lot easier to make that transition to a nature positive future. Thinking about the future, we would love to know, what are your plans at Wildlands for future projects and expansions, and how do you see your platform evolving over time?
We've got big visions, and our co-founder Paul Detman is one of the biggest visionaries going around, and often we need to contain his ideas, but he really is one of those people who's playing 3D chess and really connects the dots better than most. We've deliberately set up Wildlands as a marketplace. So the goal is that actually whilst we began working with Cassinia, that over time we'll bring on more landholders and more major conservation organisations, starting with Australia, but also working internationally. And so we've designed our entire platform with scalability at its heart, whether it be the ledger or the registry that we built in collaboration with a third-party independent registry that can house not only our immediate units but bring on future units. And then we're also creating the technology to be able to deploy those units not only to our wildlands.earth platform but also to other platforms, whether that be the government's upcoming voluntary biodiversity marketplace, whether that be international distributors like Patch and others that we've been in discussions with. Our goal is to be part of a movement but also help start that movement by enabling partners to work with us, to enable us to use our technology to unitize the impact of their work and then to bring those to market. And by us building both the registry and the platform, it means we're not here waiting for the government to bring their voluntary biodiversity market to fruition. We're getting ahead of that, and we're learning. And it sounds incredibly arrogant, but we're truly trailblazing and making the mistakes that others can learn from as we go. So we're looking to grow, and it's one of the reasons we're privately funded and not a not-for-profit, is because our aspirations meant that we need to be able to raise money and have that, more nimble ability that comes from that type of structure.
Yeah, a comment around trailblazing is not unfounded. You are definitely trailblazing for biodiversity and wildlife here in Australia, and I'm so pleased to hear about your plans to expand internationally. I think nature tech out of Australia has a really unique opportunity to take over the world purely because of the biodiversity and wildlife challenges that we've experienced in our country. It enables us to develop really innovative solutions to tackle what is essentially a global problem.
I do have one other thing I might add, and it comes to that point I mentioned earlier around the advantage of coming into a sector with knowledge from other areas and no knowledge here, because I don't know how things are done in this sector. I haven't come from here. I previously worked in the AFL industry, and what the AFL and sporting industry as a whole did incredibly well was take fans inside the life of players. They took fans into the locker room. They took fans into the huddles. And at the time, I remember there was real resistance to this. You know, that's not how we do things. You know, we can't let fans into the locker room to hear the speeches. We can't let them know the players too much. But they did that, and it's revolutionized sport. And the vision that I have for Wilderlands and our space is, what does it look like to do that for ecologists? What does it look like to treat our ecologists like we would elite sports, you know, sportsmen and athletes and NBA players, and actually, you know, make being an ecologist and a conservationist sexy? What does that look like to actually completely rewrite the playbook on what it means to document conservation work so people feel not only connected to the work but aspiring to become part of the work? So I think that's the other exciting aspiration I have for Wilderlands, but also the sector more broadly, is how do we draw inspiration from other sectors and other leaders, because there's so much that can be learned, and there's so much quality work here and quality stories and quality people. If only they had the glitz and glam and gusto of some of these other industries that are dealing with far less important issues, but actually, you know, have really worked out how to capture the hearts and minds of individuals.
I think you've highlighted exactly why it's so important for individuals from other industries to have a crack and jump into conservation, because we really do need those insights and successes from other sectors, other organisations, to really drive that innovation in the conservation space. So I really applaud you for taking the step in from what was AFL into conservation. I'm sure it was a huge jump for you. What advice would you have for other individuals looking to jump into conservation or wanting to make protecting the planet a priority, but they don't know where to start?
Well, I'll start with the first bit, because the first bit's the heart of what I hear when I hear you say that is, what does it look like to step into a role where every day you're out of your depth, but you're committed to learning? And I've done that a few times, and each time I've had months of wondering whether I made the right decision, and then at the end of it, realizing that actually this is what, you know, career growth feels like, and it's incredibly rewarding, but requires hard work. And so the simple part is, if you want to do the work and you want to make an impact, find a role, step into it, be open to not knowing things, be open to learning, and be open to actually leaning on others to help you grow. And so there's one thing at Wilderlands that's very, very clear, is we have real subject matter expertise in certain areas of the business, and we really lean on those individuals, whether it's expertise around environmental markets, whether it be expertise around conservation work, ecology work, sales and marketing. We have a real delineation, and we really lean on each other and support each other to do that. And that helps us feel really comfortable that, you know, we're constantly speaking to each other and in with shared knowledge and helping each other grow. But none of us, you know, posture to be an expert across everything, and that's not the goal. So that's my first point. The second point around how do you find a role in making a difference? Well, the exciting thing is there's more roles coming every day. And so what you thought was on the market is not what's in planning and what's in the market next week. We're right now hiring for a role, head of content and community. It's an incredible role. That role wasn't available 6 months ago. So, and frankly, I'm not at all pigeonholed by industry experience. The other thing that's interesting is the best five candidates we had last time we ran this role, none of them were based in Victoria. So geography doesn't matter as far as I'm concerned. We're getting candidates from these roles from all across the country, and we're working out how to make things work, because the best talent doesn't necessarily sit in your own backyard, and nor do the best opportunities sit in your own backyard. So I would just say, rather than focusing on what you don't bring to a role, focus on what you can add that's maybe different and what your perspective is. But there's, we're all learning here, and that's the other assumption is you don't want to step into a new area because you're going to be starting so far behind. But we're all learning constantly, and I, goodness me, I can say the words, but my depth of knowledge is nothing like some of my colleagues, that's for sure.
I'll let you in on a bit of a secret. Coming from the conservation space, we're always learning and always feeling like we're out of our depth, because nature and biodiversity is a moving beast. It is evolutionary, and by its nature is always changing. So there's something to learn in conservation every single day. So whether you're from in the industry or you're outside the industry, we're all really in the same boat. Heath, is there anything else you wanted to let our listeners know before we wrap up?
We launched in August 2022. Since then, we've protected 50,000 square metres of vulnerable Australian habitat, thanks to incredible support of nearly over 1,000 supporters across Australia. We've been highlighted by the World Economic Forum. We were invited over to the UN's Biodiversity Conference. And I reveal all of that because it sounds like this inevitable success, but I can tell you when we launched, we did so with great excitement but great trepidation. And what it shows to me is there is a real movement happening, because when we launched in August, at the time when we spoke to people about biodiversity, they had no idea what we were talking about. The government hadn't come out and spoken about the future of a voluntary biodiversity market. Australia hadn't joined over 190 countries in committing to protect 30% of nature by 2030. And so I think the only thing to reiterate is the world is changing at a speed that means biodiversity is becoming a household term, and understanding is growing. And there's no more exciting time to step up and actually make protecting the planet not only a priority in your work life, but in your own life. And at Wilderlands, we're here to help people start that journey for as little as $30 for 10 square metres of protection. And I think we're going to see many competitors coming into this space, and we won't look at them as competitors, because this problem is so big that we need to all work together. And we're so grateful for the support we've received from the likes of yourself, from the likes of a whole range of different industry supporters. And it's great testament to the way that, particularly in Australia, startups support each other and founders get around each other, because we know that, you know, we're tackling our small part of the world here, but we're doing it with great gusto, and we're being recognised globally for the way we go about it.
Heath Evans, CMO of Wilderlands, it has been an absolute honour to have you on Silo's Nature Positive Network podcast. We are huge fans of Wilderlands, and I'm sure all of our listeners will be huge fans now. Don't forget to go out and buy yourself some biodiversity units on the Wilderlands website so you can protect biodiversity for perpetuity. We wish you all the best on your journey with Wilderlands, and we'll be watching very closely as you, you know, pursue world domination.
Thanks so much, Camille. Really, really appreciate it.
This is the Nature Positive Network podcast, brought to you by Xylo Systems.